Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 278. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Trying to get those vocal cords tuned up for a morning show. Not our normal time, but here we are on Monday morning, February the 19th. So good to be with you.
Need some coffee?
Yeah.
Haven't had my coffee yet, but maybe I'll get some after the show here. But yeah, it's 9:30 a.m. right now. Usually, it's about 12 hours after we usually record. Usually, it's 8, 9 o'clock at night we record. But I got back late after the Nerf draft down in Massachusetts. Had about two-hour drive back home. So we figured we'd just record in the morning. I today off for work. So figured it would be a fun little morning show here. And it's Dynasty Buy-Sell Week here on the Tool Shed. Got three episodes upcoming of this topic for you. Today will be infielders, Wednesday outfielders, and Friday we will round it out with some pitchers. Be probably 12 names on each show, six sells, six buys, so three from each of us on both of those. So it'll be a lot of fun, a lot of fun names to talk about here. Before we get into it, though, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris the Roto Clegg. I'm at EricCross04, shows at Toolshed Pod. And of course, check out all the great stuff going on at Rotoballer. 10% off using the code TOOLSHED. You get that discount on any premium package. A lot of great content and tools to help you win this season. So again, TOOLSHED gets you 10% off. And check out all the stuff we got going on over on our personal platforms, the dynasty.go.com and toolshedfantasy.com. All of our rankings and a lot of other fun stuff is over on both of those platforms. Figure we go with the sells first, so six of those, then do six buys in the second half of the show. Chris, who is your first sell?
So I don't think the sells are ever going to be very popular, and this is obviously some tough decisions that had to be made to talk about these sells in the infield position, but I ultimately landed on Ha-Seong Kim, and it's not that I don't like Kim at all. I do think Kim's a really good ball player. He's going to play shortstop for them. He's probably going to hit in the middle of the top of that lineup. see, curious where they have him projected right now. I think at the top, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he's hit, projected to hit the top. So why is he a sell for me? Last season was a career best for him by far. He hit 17 home runs and he stole 38 bases. Nearly every bit of his roto value especially was tied up in the stolen bases. So that's a major concern for me when we think about, like, how does a player project when over three-fourths of their value is just coming from the fact that he stole so many bases? Is that repeatable? And I think that's the question that I have, because when you look at the stolen base history, that's not been Kim's MO. Now, I will say that obviously the new stolen base rules last year with the leadoffs, the pickoff kind of thing, allowed for more stolen bases. But previously, Kim had stolen just six bases in 117 games, and then he stole 12 bases in 2022 across 150 games. So do I really believe that he's going to steal 38 again? I actually don't think so. And knowing that's where a lot of value is tied, I just believe that there's a chance that his value does take a pretty decent size hit. I will say the positives are he's going to have positional flexibility, which for fantasy purposes is huge. But when you look at the lineup behind him and you see Xander Bogaerts, when you see Fernando Tatis, when you see Manny Machado, I'm just not sure they're going to send him as often. And I think that could really affect his value. Not to say that he won't be on base a lot. That's not to say that he won't also be able to score a lot of runs. I do think he's going to be able to do those things. I'm not sure where the stolen bases land. And also the power, I think, is a big question mark. You look at the underlying metrics here. His average EV was in the seventh percentile among all hitters at 86.2. The barrel rate was really bad at 4.2%. And the 26% hard hit rate was just third percentile among all MLB hitters. He had perfected the poolside power to get to those home runs. Can he do it again? I'm just not sure. I like the profile. I think he's going to get on base. I think he's going to score runs. But I'm afraid he sees a big tick back with stolen bases, and he's something like a 12 home run, 20 stolen base bat. And I'm not sure that kind of value is worth where he's going in draft or what you can get for him right now. So therefore, I'd probably look to sell if I could in a dynasty, because I do think people are buying for several reasons I mentioned, and I think you can get a potential top 100 return and be better off because of that.
Yeah, no, that's a solid pick there. I think a lot of stuff is legit about Kim with the plate approach, you know, plate discipline and the approach to the plate. But yeah, power, speed, I think this is going to be a slight tick back there. So yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, this one's not going to be popular either. Anytime I post about him on Twitter, people like to go against it. That's fine. But mine's CJ Abrams to start out my section. A similar thought process, especially with the power. He had 18 home runs last year. And it might seem odd to say that a player that's still only 23 years old isn't going to progress in the power department, but he's just never projected as a big power hitter anyway. You come up through the minor leagues, we thought, yeah, he's going to be 15 to 20 home runs. And I think what he showed last year is probably more on the high end. I think there's a better chance he goes down and then up in power this year. And people will say he improved in the second half. And yeah, there were some improvements there for sure. But the quality of contact is still below average. And he's a very aggressive hitter, and that limits him. He doesn't strike out a lot. He'll put the bat in the ball. But you know, he's always been a below average walk rate guy for his career so far, 4%. That was 5.2% last year. So that limits him there. And you look at his season last year, and you could break it down really into three different acts, so to speak, with CJ Abrams. So from opening day until June 18th, which was 233 plate appearances, slash 215, 256, 365. And then from June 19th through August 11th, which was 192 plate appearances, 316, 368, 489. Then from August 12th through the end of the season, 189 plate appearances. So these are all give or take 200 plate appearance samples, 212, 280, 394. So two-thirds of the season, he was hitting below 220, had an OBP below 300, and a slug below 400. It was just that middle 2 months or so of the season where he was really hot and that kind of boosted his value. Yeah, Abrams is a plus runner. He was 82nd percentile sprint speed last year. He's going to run. He always has. He always will. So could he be another 40 steal guy? Sure, at least 30. That's going to be there. But I do think the power takes a step back. I think he's probably more, 12, 13, 14 home runs. And maybe I'm selling him short. We shall see. But I just don't think, I think there's a better chance he goes down from 18 than up from 18. And contact skills are fine. They're not great. He was slightly above average zone, slightly above average overall. But again, the aggressiveness does limit him. He's a career 37% chase rate guy. So I think that's the big thing right there. I think this is going to be a slight setback. I still think he's a top 100 guy. Again, like Chris was saying, I still think he's going to be good. But the perceived value on him, which is everything in Dynasty again, is just way too high right now. And even look at his redraft ADP is like top 40. I'm just not there. I think he's more like in the 60 to 80 range overall as like a potential 50 homer, 40 steal guy with an okay average that won't kill you, but won't help you either. So due to the perceived value being so high and some of these skills not being great, I will have CJ Abrams as a sell right now. And Chris, I absolutely love your next guy on the sell list here.
All right. And this one feels like low hanging fruit, but some people are not in this camp. And that's Isak Paredes, who I am selling pretty much anywhere I can for a variety of reasons. Starting with the fact that he had a major breakout season and he probably never repeats the caliber of year he put up. 31 home runs, but he hit just 250 with a 350 OBP. And a 488 slug. Here's why. Go pull up his spray chart, look at it, and look at where all of his home runs are. They're all concentrated in the very left-hand corner of the field. He perfected pulling these fly balls, not even hard-hit fly balls, and mashed a lot of home runs. So Paredes provides zero with speed. You're not going to get anything there. Pretty much all the production is from power. And if he regresses, which I firmly believe he will, let's just say to a 20 home run bat, then we're looking at a pretty significant drop in his production. So for those reasons, I look at the profile and think, okay, yes, Paredes is not like a huge dynasty asset by any means, but he's what I'm looking to get off of as soon as possible. The power metrics are not great. You look, he had a 6% barrel rate, 26th percentile, average EV of 86.9. That's 13th percentile among all hitters. Hard hit rate of 28.5%, 6th percentile. Not hitting ideal angles either. Sweet spot percentage was very low. He does make contact. That's the biggest benefactor of his game. So he has good contact skills. He can take a walk, but I do think his value is being a bit inflated. I look at the heavy fly ball profile, launch angle of 22.2 degrees. That's not great there. He's very reliant on those pulled fly balls getting out of the park. And we've seen the volatility in those profiles over the years. How consistent will the production be? I think that's still hard to answer, but in general, I'm pretty out on Paredes, and I am looking to sell while I can.
Oh, I'm 100% out on Paredes. People are like, oh, he perfected that. It's hard to maintain that, though. That's a very hard profile because pitchers will adjust to that and just pitch him more away and make him go the other way to beat them. And yeah, he could still pull a pitch on the outside half, absolutely, but yeah, that's just a really risky profile. And yeah, he could have a little bit uptick in average, but I think there's going to be a massive downtick there in power. Like, I would bet every penny I have that his home run total this year is less than last year and probably by a lot. So yeah, love that one. Next one for me, another unpopular one, but I'm going Francisco Alvarez. It's, again, not a knock on the talent. He's a great power bat. I've seen that firsthand, saw him in AA. This could be a guy that's 25 plus home runs annually, and he got there last year. 25 home runs and 423 plate appearances. People are like, oh, he could be 30. Yeah, he could. You know, he definitely has the power to be. But go back and look at how many 30 home run catchers we've had like in the 21st century. It's not a very long list. It's been a few here and there, but by and large, you know, just due to the rigors of the position and the, you know, lesser playing time that they usually get, it's just hard to get there consistently. But definitely a guy that could be at least approaching 30 home runs annually. That's not the question I have with Alvarez. My question, which has always been my question, dating back to his days as a top prospect, is where will the average be at? This is a guy that struggles against all three pitch types. They are all below 220 this past year. And fastballs, he hit 213. That's where a lot of his power was, off of fastballs. Breaking balls, he hit 211. Off speed, 192. He's got below average zone contact rate, well below average overall contact rate, 32% whiff rate. I was questioning where his average would be back when he was in Double A. And do I think he's better than 209? Yes, but how much better? And again, with the perceived value on him, every time I talk about him, like, the perceived value on him is still a lot higher than it is on Yiner Diaz or Logan Ohapi. And I don't see, I like Diaz more, first off. Let me put that out there. I like Diaz more right now. And then long term, is there really a big difference between the profiles of Logan Ohapi and Francisco Alvarez? Ohapi, you can get much later in drafts or at a much lower cost. They're both probably going to hit similar average with similar power. And maybe a little bit more power for Alvarez, but maybe a little more average for Ohapi. So I just don't see why the perceived value is so high. Yeah, I do. It's just he was a former number one overall prospect, I think, on pipeline at one point. But as a potential, I think he's more of like a, I can see him selling like the 230 range with 25 plus home runs. So was he new Cal Raleigh or something like that? It just, the perceived value is way too high on Alvarez. He's good, great power bat, but always going to be on the lower ends on the average and OBP spectrum. Does walk a fair amount, right around league average last year, but the average is going to keep that OBP down. Maybe he gets in the low threes, 310, 315, 320. But you can, I'd rather go after a different catcher that has a similar profile and I can get for a lot cheaper. So Alvarez is a very solid sell for me right now. Chris, who is your third sell?
It's another hard one. And like I said, these are all tough to do. That's Cody Bellinger. I'm not sure what you can actually get for Bellinger in a dynasty league because his value is pretty all over the board right now. But he is ranked pretty high in some places, which leads me to believe that there are still people that believe in him and that you can get maybe top 50 value for Bellinger. He remains unsigned, and I've heard that he's willing to hold out and begin the season not on a team, which is absolutely wild, but that's apparently where he's at. And obviously Scott Boras is his client or his agent, and Bellinger is Boras' client. So that is tough, but I do think the Bellinger to sell outside of those reasons, even if he wasn't a free agent. He had a great year. I won't say a career best year because his MVP year in which he mashed 47 homers and hit 305, stole 15 bases, obviously much better. But with the Cubs last year, he hit 26 homers, he stole 20 bases, and he hit 307. So it was a really good season overall for him. There were a lot of things to like in the profile, but you look, and first off, his average exit velocity dropped a mile and a half, which is pretty substantial. That was down to 87.9. That's 22nd percentile. The barrel rate was not good. 6.1%, 27th percentile. Hard hit rate of 31%, 10th percentile. Not good at all. Why did Bellinger perform so well? He hit the ball at ideal angles very often. He had a 38% sweet spot percentage, which was very highly ranked, 86th percentile. That was up 4 percentage points from 2022. So that was a good jump in the consistent launch angles. I don't know. I look at this profile and I say, okay, who's Cody Bellinger? Because you look and the contact rate fluctuation is pretty interesting. He made some major gains there. He actually had a 7 percentage point gain in contact rate in 2023, which is okay. Is that sustainable at all? He did it for a whole year. So maybe then you look at the zone contact rate, it jumped from 77.5 percentage points to 85% in 2023. So major jumps in the contact. It's almost like he sold out for contact and didn't focus on power, which still had 26 home runs. So that's pretty good. He had just 556 plate appearances and did that. Seems pretty substantial. But in general, I'm selling Bellinger because I do believe that overall there's probably some regression coming. I don't believe he can hit 307 again. There's no way that I see this happening, actually. And that in itself like was a huge sticking point in his value. He ran a 320 BABIP, which, okay, it's well above average, but he had a 255 and a 196 BABIP the previous years. He actually, that was his highest BABIP of his career by a decent mark. So I look at Bellinger and I think, okay, what can I get for him? If I get top 50 value for him in Dynasty, I'm absolutely selling. And I think that that would be a good price point to try to sell and to get a top 50 player back.
Yeah, no, absolutely there. And I feel like, I don't know, is Bellinger just going to be always one of those guys that's just so up and down with him? I think we've already seen, obviously, he has MVP years, then years where he was almost unrosterable in fantasy. And now, you know, obviously that big bounce back year. But yeah, I definitely would look to. I don't have any shares of him. So obviously, I was very vocal against Bellinger the last couple of years. But so I don't have any shares to sell right now. But if I did, yeah, I would definitely be, you know, at least throwing that message out there to my league mates. Hey, you know, Bellinger's available. Let's see what I can get. Because there's going to be somebody in every league that likes Bellinger a lot more than I do. Good. Yeah, great sell right now. My final sell, I've been back and forth between several names here. I almost went with Josh Jung, almost went with, you know, Nico Hoerner, but I'm ultimately going to go with Nolan Gorman of the St. Louis Cardinals. Another kind of like second base version of Francisco Alvarez. We know the power is going to be there, and it has been there so far. He's got 41 home runs in his first 777 plate appearances. ISO over 200 so far. You look at last year, barrel rate super high, 16.5%, 91 mile an hour average exit velocity, and a 48.5% hard hit rate. So quality of contact, zero issues there. It's just the kind of the rest of the profile I have an issue with. K rate has been very high both years in the major leagues. Was 32.9% in his rookie season, 31.9% last year. Did increase the walk rate 2.5%. I'll give him that. But he really struggles against non-fastballs. He hit 282 with a 569 slug against fastballs last year and right around 190 or so against breaking balls and off-speed pitches as well. Swinging strike rate around 16% both years of his career. That's very high. Below average zone contact, below average overall contact. He's running a 67.5% overall contact rate. So I wonder if he goes in another funk. You get Thomas Ajayi right on his heels. And over his final 284 plate appearances last year, he got off to a hot start. On May 25th, he was slashing 297, 389, 613. And then for over the last 284 plate appearances of last season, 199, 289, 394, with a strikeout rate about 35%. Let me pull up the exact number here. Yeah, 35.6% strikeout rate over the final. That's about half a season worth of plate appearances right there, or a little under. It was 73 games from him. So I just wonder if the average is ever going to be more than 230 or so, and does he lose time? I don't think he'll ever be like a strict bench bat, but does he end up going into a kind of a part-time role? And I don't think it'll be like a platoon either. He doesn't really have platoon split issues, so to speak. But I'm just wondering if the sheer inconsistency of his profile and his performance, the big K rates, which cause a lot of those peaks and valleys for him, make him not be a full-time 600-plus plate appearance guy ever. Is he always going to be one of those guys that's in the 400 to 450 plate appearance range? I think that's a possible outcome here. And again, he's got Thomas Ajayi, breathing on his neck. So if he goes into a massive funk where he's hitting 160 over a month, does he end up getting benched for a bit? I think these are questions that we need to ask with Gorman. And yeah, he's a fun player. You look at the quality of contact, that's really fun. But I think the perceived value on him is higher than it should be. I think if you asked, if I put out a poll, I think, I don't know, what do you think the perceived value is on him, Chris? Do you think it's like pushing top 100 overall, or at least like top 150?
Yeah, top 150 to 175, if I had to guess.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm lower than that on him. So Nolan Gorman is my third sell here. So we have six sells: Ha-Seong Kim, CJ Abrams, Isak Paredes, Francisco Alvarez, Cody Bellinger, and Nolan Gorman. Let's turn it over, make it positive here. Second half of the show is going to be six buys, players that are all good values, you know, for one reason or another. Maybe they're good buy low, or it's a good buy as their values we think is going to increase over the next, you know, year or so. So Chris is leading it off with an infielder from the National League West.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. All righty. So, yes, National League West, San Francisco Giants, and that's Tyro Estrada, who I am certainly buying anywhere I can. And you might think, why? It was just a okay season. I think he's one of the more underrated players of the position. You look at the group of this kind of profile with good power, good speed, but not like huge, like 2020 type. But you look at Estrada, and he was really defined by pre-injury and post-injury last season, where he dealt with some a wrist injury, and then he later fractured his hand on a hit by pitch. So you look at the profile, he hit 271, had a 315 OBP last year with 14 homers and 23 stolen bases. So not great at all, but leading up to the wrist injury. So he had the wrist injury late May. Before that, 206 plate appearances, he had 301, 345, 466. With six home runs and 13 stolen bases. So then he has the wrist injury. He misses some time. Leading up to the hit by pitch with a hand fracture, over that span of 109 plate appearances, he hit 216 with a 249 OBP, three homers, five stolen bases. So clearly, I think he was scared to run and hurt the wrist further. We've seen plenty of players hurt their wrist sliding into second, stolen bases. Then he came back from the fractured hand, which obviously I think had an effect too, but he hit 268, 298, 390 with five home runs and five stolen bases. Tale of three seasons, or three parts of the season, in my opinion, with Estrada. I think that he clearly wasn't healthy at any point after May. I think that was evident just by the fact that he wasn't stealing, he wasn't getting the power, and he wasn't hitting for average. I look at what he did in the first couple of months of the season and think, okay, is Estrada going to hit 301? Probably not. But can he hit 275, 280, give you 15 to 20 home runs and steal 25 bases? Yeah, I absolutely believe that's a real outcome in Estrada's profile. He's not valued highly at all. So looking at Estrada, I think that it's just an easy buy here, especially with the likes of a Ha-Seong Kim, who I think is a very similar profile, and you can get him much cheaper in Dynasty, way later in a draft. So I'm absolutely buying Tyro Estrada this year. I think it's one of the easier buys for me, actually, in any format.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree there. He's not flashy, but solid, consistent production. And yeah, you mentioned if he's fully healthy this year, could take a step forward. Yeah, I like that a lot. I feel like a lot of San Fran players get undervalued. I think they're kind of like Pittsburgh in that sense where, you know, unless it's the super flashy player, but they don't really have any super flashy players right now. Logan Webb has always been undervalued. I was guilty of that too. Tyro Estrada, a lot of undervalued guys on that San Fran team. So I like that. I'm going to go a little flashier here with mine and go Nolan Marte from the Cincinnati Reds. And I could have put several Cincinnati Reds players here. I think Christian Encarnacion Strand is a great buy this year. I think Matty McClain is still a good buy because I think people aren't valuing him as high as they should. And Nolan Marte is another one. And that's the one I'm going with here. I've been insanely high on Marte for a long time, since his days in the low minors of the Seattle Mariners organization. If you remember, I put out a tweet about a week or so ago with my top 10 each of the last 5 years, dating back to 2019. And I had him top 10 back in 2019. And like I was, again, very high right off the get-go with him. As soon as I saw him get some work in the rookie ball back then, I was just enamored with the all-around profile, the power, the speed. And now you get that in Great American Ballpark. Sign me up all day and twice on Sunday. Look at last year. He was one of just 8 hitters. Yeah, it was a small sample size, but still 123 play appearances, so not like insanely small. Was one of 8 hitters to have a hard hit rate above 45% and have a sprint speed in the 90th percentile or better. That was the question with him when he bulked up a year and a half, 2 years ago. Would the speed still be there? Would the willingness to run still be there? And both those answers have been yes. Now, he still was stealing bags in the minor leagues. He had 6 steals in those 123 plate appearances last year with Cincinnati. And yeah, he only hit 3 home runs. Because the launch angle was 1.9 degrees. Ground ball rate was 52.8%. So that was kind of reason why it was only a trio of home runs. But this is a potential 30-homer bat in Great American Ballpark, without question. He's still 30? Probably not. But could he be 15 to 20 steals annually? Absolutely. Again, he's still shown both the speed and the willingness to run. Is like a two-part system there with steals. He's shown both of those. And the contact skills are, you know, very solid as well. He's always been like an above-average contact guy, both in zone and overall. Not any chase or whiff rate issues here. So I think once you factor in that BABIP boost, I think he's going to hit 270 or higher. I think he's going to be at least 25 home runs and at least 15 steals and maybe 30-20. This is a potential top 25 overall player and a guy that could easily get up into the Devers Riley range of third baseman as soon as next offseason. I think that's really the upside and the talent we're looking at here with Marte. So I'm all in redraft was ADP is like 170 or something. Oh my word. I'm gobbling up that ADP all day. And Dynasty, I think he's still not valued as high as he should and has that massive breakout appeal. So easy buy with Nolan Marte right now.
I think we're going to become like the Nolan Marte like podcast. Everybody's like, I'm buying because you said it, you kind of thing. I hope
gonna,
that he
I'm
does.
Put, I'm going to put it in the bio. Like, oh, this is a pro Nolan Marte podcast.
Yes, that is the truth. We are in on Nolan Marte. My next guy is actually the highest ranked guy I think we'll talk about all show. And that is Bo Bichette. Bichette, it's so interesting to me how quickly, I won't say people jumped off board, but have taken a step back from him as a 25-year-old who's done a lot of things exceptionally well. Bichette was top 10 on a lot of dynasty lists very quickly after the big 2021 season. He has consistently been good year over year since debuting. Career 300 hitter. I get it. Oh, he plays down in OBP league, so know your format. Know that he does play down there. But Bo last year had a quote down year. He played 135 games, had a little bit of injury, 600 plate appearances. He still hit 20 home runs. He had 30 doubles, and he hit 306. Yes, he only stole 5 bases, so I think the stolen bases are the biggest question mark. Like, how many steals does he get? But he is as safe as they come when we're looking at a batting average standpoint. He's going to score runs. He's going to have RBI opportunity. He could be a 90-90 hitter from a run RBI standpoint. He could hit 300. He could give you 25 home runs, and he could steal 10 to 15 bases. And I think that he's just being massively undervalued right now. And I'm not quite sure why. I do think I know why, just the fact that he is obviously not running. He didn't hit for power. It's just this boring kind of profile. But I think it's wrong to drop Bichette as low as he's been dropped in a lot of rankings. I know that it wasn't the best year for him, but I do think that he played banged up a little bit. I do think that there is a lot more in the tank to like from Bo Bichette, because we're not that far removed from him being a really freaking good hitter, like year over year. And so I look at the underlying metrics. Okay, he's hitting the ball hard enough. He has an average EV over 90 miles an hour, barrel rate near 10%, hard hit rate at 45%. Like, those are all like above average. Hits the ball at ideal angles. The 38% sweet spot percentage is 90th percentile among all hitters. He's going to hit for average. That's all he does. So I think Bo is actually a really good buy for dynasty purposes. He's still only 25. It's like, why would I not buy? He's hit the ball hard consistently. He hits the ball at good angles. He's going to hit for average. If you want to fade him, that's fine. I understand fading him in an OBP context, but we're really not that far removed from, like, in 2021. Let's just see where he finished on the player rater. 2021, he finished as the second best hitter on the Razzball player rater. Really good stuff there. 2022, it wasn't as good, but Bichette still finishes the 18th best hitter on the player rater. I think when you put it all together, Bo has a really good year in 2024, and he makes him a really good buy in Dynasty. If you're in a 5x5 format, buy all day long.
Yeah, no, I definitely think Bo's value goes back up. It's funny, I did actually sell him in my home keeper league, but I got really good value in return there. I got Evan Carter and a high draft pick, which I think converted into another good player. So it's funny, but I do think in general, yeah, Bo's better than what he did last year. I think that Toronto lineup all underperformed to some degree. Like St. Louis, like, there's a lot of good bounce back appeal there for several players, including Bo. So I like that a lot. I'm going to stick in the American League East. I tried to not put this guy on the show sheet, but I can't do it. I'm going Tristan Cassis. I am just so enamored with Tristan Cassis. I am so in on Tristan Cassis right now. It's not even funny. And people, you follow me, you've seen I've tweeted about him several times this offseason. I don't think people realize how good he was in the second half of last year. Yeah, people know that he was good, but he was fifth in, actually tied for fourth in both WRC plus and WOBA over the second half of last year. These were he was tied with some guy named Ronald Acuna Jr. in both of those for fourth overall. And then the three ahead in each category were Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Matt Olson. He was in elite company from July 8th on. In 216 plate appearances, he slashed 319, 417, 622, 15 home runs, 13.9% walk rate, and a 23.6% K rate. I think he's better long term than Vlad Jr. People are not going to like that whatsoever. But you look at what Cassis did last year once he got his footing. Up was up and down first half of the season for him, but this is a guy that has always had the skills. That raw power has always been massive. Never had the big home run totals in the minor leagues, but he was interviewed, this is probably, I don't even know, 2021, early 2022, something like that, about how he was just working on the other parts of hitting, working the count, going the other way. And he wasn't really worried about driving the ball. He's like, I know I have the power and I can flip that switch back on when I want to. I love that interview. He's a very smart, very mature hitter, and I think he's going to be an absolute beast for a long time. Even in Red Sox land, there's a lot of people that are like, who hits more home runs this year? Cassis or Devers? Like, people are already really high on him, And I think we keep looking at a guy that jumps up into that second tier, or I don't know if you want to call it a second tier, a first baseman or big first tier. Kind of depends on how highly up you have Olsen and Freeman, but definitely jumps up into at least the Pete Alonso, Vlad Jr. range, and maybe even passes them. If next year I'm ranking him number three in my dynasty first base rankings, I wouldn't be shocked by that. This is a 35 plus homer bat. Got to hit around 270 or so. Good OBP of even more value in OBP formats. And he's going to be hitting smack dab in the middle of a, you know, pretty solid top two-thirds of the lineup for Boston. He'll be hitting right behind Jaron Duran, Rafael Devers, right in front of like Trevor Story, Tyler O'Neill, Masataka Yoshida. So that's a pretty good top two-thirds of that lineup. Is it Studley? No, it's not Atlanta. It's not Texas. It's not the Dodgers. But it's still pretty solid players in front and behind him. So I think you're looking at a guy that's a huge impact in three categories, solid average, and obviously he won't give you much speed, but what first baseman really does these days. But yeah, easy buy. I think the value is going to absolutely skyrocket this year, and I would bet a high amount of money that this guy is a universal top 40 or top 30 dynasty player by this time next year. So go get Tristan Casas. The value should only go up from here.
All right, let's round out the show with a couple catchers. About it. So I'm going with Sean Murphy of the Atlanta Braves. Murphy was a strong tale of two halves. And I think that it was pretty explainable. And I think that's always the answer you need to have when thinking about these player valuations is why did a player perform the way they did? And you look at Murphy, pre-All-Star break, so first half, he had 306, 400, 599, 17 home runs across 270 plate appearances with 17 doubles. So that's pretty insane to have 34 extra base hits and hit 300 at the catcher position in 270 plate appearances. Then the second half, Murphy hit 159, 310, 275 with just four home runs and four doubles across 168 plate appearances. So what was going on then with Sean Murphy? And here's the answer to the question. Sean Murphy had a hamstring injury around the end of June. So he was removed from a game on June 17th with a hamstring strain. So he had been dominating. He missed a couple of games. He was fine. He made it work, but he missed like a week's time, I think, with the hamstring injury. It was mild, but the catcher position is pretty brutal on your legs when you think about it. So the hamstring and being behind the dish don't mix very well. I think this really lingered most of the year. So then he also had some issues with a potential concussion later in the year. They said he never went on concussion protocol, but I'm wondering if there was something that he played through that really bothered him. This was in mid-August. They said Sean Murphy's all good. Like, he had been taken out of a game. They thought he had a concussion. I don't know. The whole situation was just really weird. It was a bizarre thing where he was hit on the head, like under the helmet. And they kept playing him, but not really playing him. And then the results were just not good at all. So I'm chalking it up to the fact that he was hurt. He had maybe had a concussion. And if he didn't fully have a concussion, like, he was playing with a pretty banged up head. So I think that ultimately when we're looking at this profile with Sean Murphy, he's much better than I'm not saying he's going to be first half Sean Murphy all year, but let's run down the metrics. You look in his average EV of 91.5 miles an hour, 84th percentile. Expected slugging, 537, 95th percentile. Barrel rate, 16.1%, 96th percentile. Hard hit rate, 46%, 75th percentile. Sweet spot percentage, 38%, 89th percentile. Chase rate, 23%, 83rd percentile. We keep going down the list, but I think it gets the point across. And this was even with Murphy having that really down second half. I think Murphy's a top five catcher. I know that everybody's concerned about him splitting time with Travis d'Arnaud, but the Braves paid Murphy for a reason. Having an elite defensive catcher behind the plate is huge. So I'm fully buying in that Sean Murphy is a buy. And people think he's, you know, closer to the second half Sean Murphy, then great. Go get him. If you can get him at a diminished cost, then I absolutely would. Because you look and everything backs that he's still going to be really good. And even though the metrics, like everything dipped in the second half, still overall the season was, I'd say, really good. So I'm buying Sean Murphy if you can and believing that he's going to have a major bounce back season and be quite good for you.
Yeah, the metrics look really good with Sean Murphy. And another thing I heard too, I wonder what your thoughts are on this, Chris. He said he was dealing, it was hard for him to deal with the humidity down there in Atlanta. Obviously, Oakland and Atlanta are very different climates.
Yeah.
Obviously, it is very, I remember my uncle, before he retired, he was an engineer of sorts. He moved around every several years and he was living in a suburb of Atlanta. I can't remember what it was called because this was like the late 90s. I went down there. I was like 8, 9 years old. I went with my mother on April vacation. I remember opening, he had a back sliding door off his living room to the backyard. And this was like 7 a.m. or so. It was early morning. And I just remember opening that sliding door and just getting hit like a brick with that humidity. So, I could completely see where right. Someone like you, you're used to it. You've been living down there your entire life. You're used to it. Like, I'm used to the cold and crap up here that I deal with in Maine. That most people won't, you know, be used to, but I wonder if that still affects him, or maybe he gets used to it now after being here a year. But yeah, I saw that came out like a month or so ago. I saw a report. I think it was like Sports Illustrated or something like that. So that's interesting. But you think that played a factor in his inconsistent second half? Because obviously it got hotter July, August. It coincides there.
Yeah, it's highly possible because that's a brutal stretch of the year where it's very hot and humid. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of factors that kind of weigh into this. And I do think that he will bounce back and be better. So yeah, I'm buying.
Yep. Agreed there. Again, I'm going with a catcher. Like Chris said, we're rounding up the show with two catchers here. I'm going with a younger catcher, but Luis Campusano is my guy to round out the show. Was really good last year in limited playing time. / 319, 356, 491. With 7 home runs in 174 plate appearances, at a 305 xBA as well. Quality of contact, solid, 7.7% barrel rate, 85 average exit velo, 40.6% hard hit rate. So slightly above average power, and that's where we thought he would be. That's what he projected as a prospect. He was more of a hit over power guy, but was with decent power. So I think over a full season, if he's getting 500 plus plate appearances, I think he's like upper teens, maybe gets into the low 20s. But I think that's 20, give or take a little bit either way, I think is where he ends up as. And I think that year is going to happen maybe this year because he is the starting catcher finally in San Diego. Now, Austin Nola's gone. There's no real platoon issues here. They got Kyle Nagashioka from the Yankees, but he's more like in a strict backup capacity. So he's the guy, and I think those player appearances are going to come, and the average should be really solid. He always projected as a plus hitter coming up through the minor leagues, and he showed that last year. Obviously, he hits 319, but even you look, you know, at the metrics below the hood here, and you know, the contact rate overall was 83.7%. That is well above league average. Zone contact 91%. Same issue there. Well, league average, only a 9% swing and strike rate. He is aggressive. He does chase a lot. O swing was almost 40%, but he has the contact skills to make it work easily. And so OBP, maybe he gets a little bit of a ding there. He's never going to be a high walk rate guy. Even last year, see, what was his walk rate last year? He was at, 4% for his career, 4.5%. So he'll never be a high OBP guy. OBP will be fine because the average will be higher, but it probably gets a little less valuable in OBP formats. But this guy hit probably 280 plus, maybe even over 300 again. He's got the contact skills to do so with around 20 home runs. And if he's doing that, if he's 280 plus with 20 home runs, that's a top 5 catcher right there. And as a guy that's going off the board and in redraft leagues is like the 16th or 17th catcher off the board, I think it was. I think this is going to be a real big breakout year. I think it went a little under the radar how good he was in that limited time last year, and the skills are there. So I think now that the playing time is also there, you're going to see a really nice 2024 season from Luis Campizano. So yeah, he's a strong buy for me right now. So round up the show with two catchers. So again, to recap here, our six buys were Tyro Estrada, Noel V. Marte, Bo Bichette, Tristan Casas, Sean Murphy, Luis Campizano, and the six sells again: Ha-Seong Kim, CJ Abrams, Isak Paredes, Francisco Alvarez, Cody Bellinger, and Nolan Gorman. So 12 players there. We'll do 12 more from the outfield on Wednesday, 12 more from the pitching side on Friday. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.